Good evening, friends. This is your host, Franz Weinschenk, here to welcome you to another edition of Valley Writers Read. Tonight, we've got a pretty scary science fiction story for you entitled It's Coming. The story is written by one of our most popular authors, Oscar G. Williams. He tells us it takes place in the year 2169. That's exactly 155 years from now. Not all that far away. At which time all of our scientists, astronomers, and astrophysicists believe that something very destructive is coming our way. So here is David Otero to read It's Coming.
It's Coming. The year was 2169. It was quiet in the observatory when Henry called to John. John, come and take a look at this. Henry had been studying the observations from last night, which were made by the Very Large Telescope on Cerro Parnal in Chile. John was programming the telescope for tonight's observations. He left his station and walked around the telescope to where Henry was sitting in front of his computer. What's up? Henry scooted his chair away from his computer. He said, take a look at this frame and all of the preceding ones I've called up for the same area. John pulled up a chair and sat down. He studied the observations, starting with the current one and working back to the oldest. He then started with the oldest one and worked forward. He was convinced that a dark shadow had eclipsed some stars in the background. What do you think that shadow is? I don't know what it is, but something is out there. Have you run any type of analysis? I haven't done that yet, but I am going to run one. In a couple of hours, I should know the size and velocity of the object. The astronomers sat around the conference table. Aaron sat at the head of the table. He was the head of the Chilean observatory. He said, Team, we have a problem to solve. Henry has made a discovery of something, a shadow of some type moving across some background stars. Henry discovered this shadow when he was studying last night's sightings. He went back to previous observations and saw the shadow move across parts of other stars. Henry tried to run a computer analysis. The computer couldn't do an analysis of the shadow because it radiates no energy of any type. Henry has run enough checks to be sure that this is not some kind of computer glitch. There is something there. There was considerable discussion among the team members. A number of them asked Henry questions, but he could only say, I don't have any more information. When the discussion died down, Aaron said, I want everyone to get on this. Let's try and get some answers by tomorrow. Sharon, I want you to get with our NASA contacts and have the Hubble Space Telescope scan the portion of the sky where Henry made his discovery. If there are no more questions, we will meet again at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Each of the astronomers went to their computers. They ran various analyses with no success. None of the computers could determine the size, velocity, or makeup of the shadow moving across the background stars. All of the telescopes at the observatory had been scanning the area of Henry's discovery. There were no additional observations of the shadow. The astronomers took their seats at the conference table. Aaron said, "We've received feedback from the Hubble observations. Hubble has found nothing to add to our observations. The NASA folks are as puzzled as we are. I've talked with each of you during the day, and there seems to be a consensus that an object is there and that it does not radiate any energy. A number of you have expressed an opinion, which I must say I share. There seems to be only one explanation. The object is a black hole, a free-floating black hole." There was a gasp from some of those present. All of them knew the two basic theories of black holes, but to believe that they had found the first of this type was unthinkable. All scientists know there are black holes in the center of all galaxies. We can't see them because their gravitational field is so strong even light cannot escape from them. We can determine they are there because when they devour a star or other matter, the process gives off a lot of energy, which we can detect. There is a second theory that black holes could exist in other areas than the centers of galaxies. They are called free-floating black holes. Since they are not feeding on any matter and giving off various forms of energy, they cannot be detected. Aaron asked, "Is it possible we have discovered the first free-floating black hole?" There was nothing but stunned silence in response to Aaron's question. After some discussion, it was decided to contact all major observatories and ask them to review any records that they might have of observations made in the area where Henry had discovered the shadow. They would be asked to go back at least a couple of years in researching their observations. Aaron had Sharon send out the alert. One by one, various observatories came in with negative information after searching their computer files. Two observatories reported they had found some evidence of the shadow in a couple of their observations. They emailed them to Aaron. After reviewing what had been sent, it was decided there was no question, something was there. But what was it? Aaron contacted Jack Fielding, a person he had worked with previously in NASA's astrophysics department. He told Jack of their discovery and sent him the observations. After a couple of days had gone by, Jack called Aaron and suggested he come to NASA for a more in-depth analysis. Aaron agreed. He selected John and Henry to accompany him to Florida to meet with the NASA representatives. On the flight to Florida, Aaron had a lot of time to think about the situation. He ran through his mind all of the data he knew about black holes. Black holes develop from supersized stars which exploded in a supernova. This could create a neutron star, which is almost as powerful as a black hole, but is just as likely to create a black hole. The only difference is the neutron star gives off a lot of radiation, so it is easy to detect. On the other hand, a black hole is just that, a black object giving off no form of radiation and only detectable when it is gorging on some form of matter, like an unlucky star which crosses its path. There were a number of meetings. The NASA people analyzed the observations and considered all possible alternatives to the conclusion that a floating black hole had been discovered. They finally concluded the theory that the object was a floating black hole was the only rational explanation. It was decided to develop a plan to brief the White House staff on their findings. The action part of the plan incorporated using unmanned spacecraft to determine the black hole's size, velocity, its trajectory, and the strength of its gravitational field. They realized the most difficult part of their plan was to convince the staff that this was not a short-term type of endeavor. The fact was, it would take years to develop the spacecraft they needed, deploy them, and wait until they received contact information from the spacecraft. They would have to use the history of the two Voyager spacecraft, which were launched in 1977, to illustrate the situation. The Voyager spacecraft, traveling at 37,000 miles per hour, took 37 years to reach the outer limits of our solar system. Of course, today they could develop spacecraft which travel much faster, but the reality was this project would take many years before it was known if our solar system was in danger. Aaron's group and the NASA astrophysicists had numerous meetings with the White House staff. A number of astronomers and physicists were called into these meetings to voice their opinion as to what our solar system might be facing. There was never a consensus as to what the shadow represented. However, the majority of the participants felt there was a legitimate chance they could be dealing with a floating black hole. A report was developed to be presented to the president. The president asked a number of questions during the presentation. Even though it was a part of the report, he questioned the validity of the findings. Aaron said, "Mr. President, if we only had the Chilean sightings, there would certainly be a question of a technical flaw in our system. However, two other observatories reported a sighting of an object when they went back and reviewed some of their previous observations. There is no doubt something is out there." The timeframes of the project left the president in awe. He admitted it was hard for him to grasp that it would take years for unmanned spacecraft to get to the object and send back confirmation of what was there. A number of times he had them go over the possible ramifications of a black hole encounter. Without having any definitive information, the presenters had provided a number of possible situations which could result from the confirmation that a black hole was approaching our solar system. The gravitational pull of a black hole the size of the Sun would be hundreds of thousands of times that of the Sun. The report stated that if a black hole near the size of our Sun came directly into our solar system would be completely destroyed. If the black hole was at a distance from our solar system, it could still cause some forms of havoc, such as shifting of the positions of the planets, including the Earth. The third, hopeful option, of course, was that the black hole passed far enough away so as not to cause any serious problems with our solar system. Until the direction, the size, and the velocity of the black hole was known, there was no way to determine what action to take. Because of the scope of the project, the United States could not do the job alone. It would be necessary to enlist the cooperation of other nations. The president said that he and his staff would consider their report and get back to them. Aaron, his staff, and the NASA people waited anxiously for a number of days until they received a call from the White House. It was a go. The president would back them on a plan to contact all the heads of state in major developed countries and have Aaron and his group give them the same presentation which he was given. The president was so impressed with Aaron that he designated Aaron to be the team leader. The team would consist of Aaron and his team, NASA representatives, a member of the president's staff, and necessary administrative support. Before the team started its trip to the foreign nations, it briefed the congressional heads. One senator and one House member joined the team. One would have thought this would be a moment of celebration, but there was only a collective feeling of dread. The White House made arrangements with the various countries for the team's visits. The White House staff only gave a general overview of the subject when they made the contacts. It would be up to Aaron's team to sell them on the plan. The travelers were provided with a government aircraft for their trip. The team knew this would be a hard sell. Because of this reality, there was no set timetable. They would work with each nation's representatives until they were on board with the plan or were rejected. The majority of nations agreed to the plan. The group had a very difficult job in dealing with those nations with a strong religious presence in their leadership. These were primarily the ones who rejected the assumptions offered by Aaron's team and would not commit to the plan. Those countries took the position that if the information concerning the black hole was correct, their savior would take care of them. The team reported the results of their efforts to the White House. In the next year and a half, there was a flurry of activities in the industrialized nations developing the space probes. There were a couple of sightings of the object during that time. The probes were launched toward the object using the latest sightings. The scientists associated with the program knew that it would take at least 7 years for the probes to reach the edge of our solar system. They had no idea how long after that it would take for them to encounter the black hole because they had no idea how far away it was. When the sighting of the black hole and the possible consequences of it approaching our solar system were made public, there was a somewhat similar reaction to the infamous Orson Welles radio program War of the Worlds in 1938. There was a general panic, the attendance at churches doubled, and new religions were formed overnight. Fortunately, human beings have a short memory. A few years after the probes were launched, the public and the media lost interest in the black hole. As the years passed, scientists throughout the world continued to monitor the probe's progress. After the probes left the fringe of our solar system, there was a small sigh of relief by the scientists. This meant that the black hole was not near enough to our solar system to be detected by the probes at the edge of our solar system. As the years went by and the administrations changed in the various countries, there was a general feeling of poo-pooing the scientists as fear-mongers. Then it happened. The scientists began to receive signals from the probes. They had detected a strong magnetic field. Within a short time, the scientists were able to determine the black hole's size, speed, and the trajectory. It was determined that the black hole was approximately two-thirds the diameter of our Sun. Because of the intense mass of the black hole, the gravitational field was probably 1,000 times stronger than that of our Sun. The estimated speed of the black hole was 27,000 miles per hour. On its current trajectory, the black hole would pass within about 200 million miles from our solar system. The scientists develop a briefing for the current president. As each president moved through the office, he was briefed on the original findings and the current state of the program. The current report included the information they had just received from the probes, as well as a plan to ensure the survival of the human race. The scientists pointed out that the speed of the black hole was not particularly fast. They noted that the speed of the Earth in its orbit around the Sun is 67,000 miles per hour. Because of the calculated trajectory of the black hole, it was very likely that the black hole would disrupt the orbits of some of our planets. The makeup of this group of scientists was quite different from the original group which visited various nations years before when Aaron led them. All of the original group had retired or passed away during the intervening 39 years. The group was now led by a NASA astrophysicist named Joel Escobar. After the scientists had briefed the White House of their findings, an emergency meeting of the United Nations was called into session. In this meeting, the finding of the probes and the plan to save mankind was presented to the body of nations. The plan was named NOAA. Each major nation was to build a number of spacecraft to transport people to the opposite side of the solar system from where the black hole would pass. Each spacecraft would be a city within itself, providing personal living space, synthetic food manufacturing systems, a place for animals, and a central park. The media went wild with doomsday reporting. The panic of the general public was so great, there was a worldwide disruption of production. Many people didn't go to work or school, and the world economic system almost failed. As the reality sank in that it would be 87 years before the black hole had any effect on our solar system, things slowly returned to normal. To the average person, 87 years was an eternity. It was determined that it would take around 30 years to design and build spacecraft capable of leaving the solar system. It was the year 2208. It seemed ironic that the crews who would be trained and man the spacecraft and many of the passengers were not yet born. Space travel was not new to most people. There were commercial flights to the moon. What could be better than a honeymoon on the moon? There were three small scientific enclaves on Mars manned by Russia, China, and the United States. Even with all the advanced achievements in space travel, mankind faced a daunting task to design a spacecraft capable of carrying human beings to the fringe of the solar system. There was a frenzy of worldwide collaboration on design. Joel was in constant motion coordinating these efforts. The building started. New industries sprang up overnight, and ones which had already been in the space travel field created many millionaires. As the work progressed, a United Nations task force was given the assignment for developing criteria which would be used to select those who would become passengers on the spacecraft. This was kept top secret because it was realized when the time for selection arrived, there would be chaos. During the time the spacecraft were being built, a number of sightings of the black hole were made as it moved across an area with an abundance of background stars. The media carried pictures of it. One article in the Los Angeles Times caught the attention of a worldwide audience when it published an article titled, "It's Coming," which described in detail how the Earth would be destroyed as it was jerked out of its orbit. But time heals all wounds, and it was not long before the media and the public's interest again waned. The construction of the spacecraft was drawing to an end. There were 700 ships. The crew training was complete. Each ship would have 5,000 passengers and a crew of 1,700. The selection process for about 4.5 million people began. The basic criteria was only married couples with no more than 2 children. The adults could not be older than 40. The selectees could not have any form of criminal record. And each selectee, a physical and psychiatric examination. And each ship's selection must represent the racial demographics of the world. When the selection criteria were announced, chaos and riots broke out throughout the world. Mobs tried to storm the spaceports to force their way onto shuttles moving the selectees to the spacecraft. Even some of the military who were stationed at the spaceports rebelled and tried to force their way onto the shuttles. When the movement of the passengers to the spacecraft was complete, the shuttles were housed within the craft. Below, in some areas, the conflicts had turned into civil wars and anarchy. The major nations were only able to hold together by a thread. Chin Li, a former Chinese astronaut, had been named commander of the space fleet. He ordered the fleet to begin its journey to the edge of the solar system, opposite the side the black hole would pass. Even though every system on the ships had been tested thoroughly, it was no surprise that a couple of the ships could not move out of the Earth's orbit. This meant they would face the same fate as the Earth. The remaining ships moved out of their Earth orbit to begin their trip to the edge of the solar system. As their speed increased, they quickly passed the outer giant gaseous planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and Neptune. The passengers were awed by the sight of the passing giants when they were displayed on screens throughout the ships. Then the real trip began. The psychological knowledge that they would be traveling for years encased in their metal cocoons preyed on them. That is why it was important for each passenger to have had a thorough psychiatric examination to ensure they could deal with that reality. The year was now 2235. It would be 52 years until the black hole was close enough to their solar system to affect it. By that time, they would be far enough away so they would not feel the effects of the black hole. The ships kept in contact with the Earth as they moved toward their destination. Not much changed as the years flowed by. The major countries were hanging on to sanity as the rest of the world continued to sink into anarchy. During this time, a few billionaires tried to have their own ships made to escape the black hole. Most of them never got out of the Earth's orbit. A few went off into the abyss of space, never to be heard of again. Life aboard the ships was no different from that of a small town. They elected a ship council. Children were homeschooled on their computers via pre-programmed lesson plans. There were cleanup crews, people to take care of the animals, and doctors treated patients. There were marriages, and of course there were deaths. When the ships reached their destination, they stopped and held their position, waiting for the black hole to pass by. The year was now 2265. In 22 years, the black hole would reach the solar system. Soon after the black hole reached its closest position to the solar system, communication with the Earth stopped. The people on the ship monitored the effect of the black hole on the planets. The large gaseous planets seemed to be affected less than the inner rocky planets. Mercury was pulled into an elliptical orbit, which eventually led to it crashing into the sun. Venus's orbit did not change significantly. Earth's orbit was now closer to the sun, just barely in the habitable zone. The moon had been pulled away from the Earth into its own orbit. The moon's orbit was slightly elliptical, and further calculations would show at some point the moon might strike the Earth. This movement of the moon took considerable energy from the Earth, which caused the Earth's spin to slow considerably. The days on Earth were now 36 hours long. Mars had moved into a central position in the habitable zone, almost squarely in the Earth's former orbit. As the black hole was departing from the vicinity of the solar system, the new commander of the fleet, Christopher Holmes, ordered them to start moving back to what was left of their home. The ships sat in orbit around Mars. After their arrival at Mars, shuttles had been sent to study Earth. There was no question it could not sustain life. The temperature was 177 degrees, there were numerous active volcanoes contaminating the air, and the oceans were almost dry. The continents were unrecognizable. Even though the passengers had been briefed on the possible consequences of Earth's movement in its orbit, there was a general feeling of dismay among them. The ship's captains discussed their options. The options being considered were twofold. They could try and colonize Mars. The second option was to set a course for a nearby star where planets had been discovered in what is known as the habitable zone. There was an estimate that there were billions of Earth-sized planets in the Milky Way galaxy. Of course, there was no guarantee that the star they picked would have a planet which could sustain human life. It was decided to put it to a vote of the populace of the spaceships. The vote was overwhelming to settle on Mars. Most likely, the outcome of the vote had a lot to do with the feeling that we're here. Why take off into space for many more years? The planet's water was limited, and the current atmosphere would not allow humans to live in the open. but there was a general upbeat attitude that said humans had evolved and survived what Earth had thrown at them, and Mars was just another challenge. There was a sort of cruel irony. If the three scientific stations had continued to be manned during the passing of the black hole, the scientists stationed there would be alive. But the decision had been made to bring all of the scientists back to the Earth before the approach of the black hole. Shuttles started moving workers and material to the surface of Mars to set up enclosed work stations. These stations would be expanded into habitable quarters for the ship's passengers. Man was ready to take on Mars' new frontier. The year on the ships was 2345 AD. The year on Mars was 1.
That was David Otero reading It's Coming. And as we heard, in the year 2169, scientists from all over the world spot an object heading toward our galaxy. It turns out to be a floating black hole, which is only detectable when it's gorging up some other form of matter. They contact the White House, which, along with all other international governments, begins to worry because, as scientists point out, the gravitational pull of the black hole heading our way is thousands of times greater than that of our sun. If it comes directly into our solar system, it will completely shift the positions of all the planets, including the Earth. Well, they take all this very seriously and decide that each major nation on Earth would build a number of spacecrafts to transport some of their people, animals, synthetic food, manufacturing systems, and parks to the opposite side of the solar system from where the black hole would pass. And when the black hole did hit the solar system, it moved the Earth to another place altogether, where it ended up with an average temperature of 177 degrees, making it impossible for humans to survive. So the spaceships landed on and began colonizing Mars. Wow, a pretty scary story. I don't know about you, but I'm glad I'm not living in 2169. Friends, our author tonight, whom we've had on numerous occasions, was Oscar G. Williams. He lives in Fresno and has written two books, A Token View from Inside the IRS and Flying High. He's also been a guest columnist for the Fresno Bee. He attributes much of his success as a writer to the classes he's taken from one of our other popular authors, Bonnie Hearn Hill. Thank you for that science fiction tale tonight, Oscar Williams. We hope you're working on more stories for us for seasons to come. And so we come to the close of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just go online to kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, our author will be Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.